Hey, Tony Gaskins here, popping in. You know, I got an email today and it asked me to tell more about my story. And I was like, you know, I think that's where I want to start at as I'm cranking the podcast back up. And this podcast, as I was talking to my wife, I realized it's kind of just for fun for me. This isn't a income stream or anything like that. They do have commercials and stuff that eventually come, but this is something just on the side. I talk about love and relationships a whole lot on my YouTube and on my Instagram Q&A. And so sometimes I want to get away from relationships because, to be honest with you, my relationship is perfect. And when I say that, I'm not really exaggerating. I shouldn't even say really. I'm not exaggerating. Like, I really don't want anything else from my wife more than what she gives. And she doesn't ask for anything more than what I give. And being that we've been focused on this for so long, I've been a relationship coach for so long, I have to live what I preach, because I'm not the type of person who can live a lie, nor is my wife the type of woman to allow me to live a lie. So I gotta do things the right way. And sometimes it's draining talking about love and relationships and all of the debacles and just how much craziness is going on when your relationship is fixed and you kind of need a break from it at times. So although I will do Talks with Tony on here eventually, and sometimes it won't be all the time. It's a lot of days I just have a random thought. And so I'm also using this as the same way Zig Ziglar used his podcast. I heard about life, love, and business from him, and it changed my life as a young man trying to really rid myself of the street life and street mentality and become the man that I am today. That really helped me. So, you know, I'm from Arbondale, Florida, and when I was growing up, I believe the population was 5,000 people, and my mother and father are both the babies. They're both babies of 12 kids. My mom, one of her siblings, I believe, died rather early, so it was really like 11, and then my father, baby of 12, and they grew up in Bartow, Florida, close to each other. And that's how they met. I believe one was in the 8th grade, one was in the 9th grade, from what I'm told. And they were high school sweethearts. And then my father went off to the Army. And when he came back from basic training, he married my mom. And I was born in El Paso, Texas. My dad was stationed in El Paso in the U.S. Army. And then I think around 2 years old, we moved back to Florida and moved to Winter Haven, Florida, and then to Arbondale, Florida. So from what I can remember, I was raised in Arbondale, Florida from the age of 5 years old, I believe. And I stayed there until college. And at 6 years old, that is when my parents found Christ, or Christ found them. And I gave my life to Christ as a six-year-old, not really knowing what I was doing, of course, just doing what my parents were doing. And I remember going to class, going to the first grade, and the teacher, I told her, I was like, hey, I got saved. We call it getting saved, for those of you who don't know. I got saved. And she was like, wow, that's awesome. That's amazing. And I remember we were getting ready to have a Halloween party, and we had made the little ghost and put the ghost up, and they were hanging in the room. And she told my mom that when I told her I got saved, she canceled the Halloween party. And I didn't know much about that, but, you know, growing up in Central Florida, you're in the South, and religion is a big deal. And Christians don't really celebrate Halloween because it's seen as the devil's day, even though the history, I think, has something to do with getting rid of evil spirits. But it just seen as the devil's day in the church, in the black church at least. And so she canceled that. And that was really my first experience remembering of, you know, Christian life and how people see it. And then I remember around 9 or 10, being in the back seat of the car, and we were coming around this curve that we always go around going home from Bartow to Arbondale, because we went to church in Bartow. And I was crying to God. I was praying and I was crying, and I said, "Hey, Lord, if you're real, show me your face." And I remember looking up in the sky and I'm crying. And my sister, she's over on the other side of the seat. It's dark. My mom and dad, they're in the front seat. No one knows I'm praying and I'm crying out to God at this young of an age. But I took God very seriously, because it was around the age of 7 and 8 that I started to see visions that I would be famous. And I thought it would be through sports. I was a really good athlete as I began to grow. So I thought it would be football or basketball. And I don't consider myself famous now, in case you're wondering. This isn't the level of, when I say fame, I really mean notoriety. But I would see that, and that I would have a platform for Christ. And I was crying out to God, and I looked up in the clouds, and one of the clouds was shaped like a face. Like, I saw the two holes for the eyes, and like a hole around the nose. And of course, I just seen it myself. It most likely was just a normal cloud, but you see what you believe. And from there, I was like, I'm a believer. Like, I'm believing. And when you get on the right path, you're always tested with the wrong path. So from that point, I really started to minister to my friends. In the 8th grade, I had a friend, and we were walking home from school, and we were walking to the library, and I remember ministering to him about God and just telling him, and we said the sinner's prayer, and he dedicated his life to Christ. And I was just very gung-ho, you know, for Christ. And then here comes the test, 9th grade. In 9th grade, I had a friend who my dad, I think my dad became a pastor and opened his own church when I was 14. And I had a friend who his mom and dad were pastors, and they had a church around the corner from my house. And he was 2 years older than me. I turned 15, he was 17. And we were hanging out, And I remember we were in Winter Haven, and we went to the mall, and he stole a shirt. And we were going to the Winter Haven High School basketball game, and he stole a shirt out of the Winter Haven Mall. And basically, we were in like Dillard's or something, and he grabbed a new Nautica shirt. I remember it was lime green with either navy blue or black writing that said Nautica. And he put it on his shoulder, and we just walked out the store. It was kind of a outdated mall, so I don't think they had cameras. And we went to the game, and he had on this fresh new Nautica shirt. And at that time, he was working at Winn-Dixie, the grocery store. So he was getting paid $80 a week, I think. And probably a couple weeks later, my mom took us to the Lakeland Mall, and we were at the mall, and we were going through the mall. I had money. Can't remember how I had money. And I bought some clothes out of one store, just like a button-up shirt and then like a t-shirt that goes up under it. So I had spent like $80 or something. And then we went into Dillard's, and, you know, he was like, "Hey, man, you know, you want to steal a shirt?" And I was like, "Yeah." And so he got another Nautica shirt. This was like a bright orange one. And he threw it over his shoulder, just like he did at the Winter Haven Mall. And I went into the Tommy Hilfiger section. I'm like, "Man, I want me something fancy." And I got the Tommy Hilfiger shirt, and I put it in my bag where I had bought clothes already. And I put it in my bag, and we walked out the mall, and we started to jog. You know, we were jogging. We were going to go back into the entrance of the mall to the food court. And as we were jogging, we stopped, because we were like, "Okay, yeah, we're in the clear now. We good." And this black car pulled up, and it was, you know, like the Ford Taurus or whatever, unmarked cars, black, all black, black tint. And guy hopped out, police in uniform. He said, "Hey, come here. You with the bag, come here." And I went up to him, and he was like, "Hey," you know, he grabbed my hand, and he like bent it, and he bent it backwards, like if your fingers are going to touch the inside of your forearm. You know, he bent it in half like that, and it felt like he was about to break my hand. And he was like, "You know, what do you got in that bag?" And I was like, "Some clothes." He was like, "Did you steal something out of the store?" And now me, I'm a snitch. So I said, "Yeah, but I wasn't the only one." He said, oh, you weren't the only one? And I said, no. And then he said, hey, you, come here. He called my friend over, and he said, hey, you were stealing too? And my friend, he said, yeah. He said, all right, y'all get in. And he put us in the back seat. And he drove us from Lakeland Mall to the Bartow police station and booked us in. You know, took the mugshot, took the fingerprints, put me in my cell, put my friend in his cell. And then, you know, a couple hours later, our parents showed up. My mom was at like Bible study or something. And they let us go. And they said, it's up to your parents if y'all do boot camp. My friend's parents, they sent him to boot camp, I believe. He went for 10 days. And my parents was like, no, our son, he'll get the lesson. Like, he gets it. And that was when my life started to change. Like, just being tested, being tempted. And then after that, it was my virginity. And lost my virginity, you know, on a baseball dugout. You know, in baseball where the players sit when they're waiting to bat. It was at a girls basketball game, one of the girls basketball players that I met in class, and just being a clown, like somebody had given me a condom and I like flashed it to her and she nodded her head yeah. And I don't even think I lost my virginity because I didn't know what I was doing. Now that I look back on it, and I was like, you know what, I don't think I lost my virginity that night, but you know, hey, I tried. And then from there, it was all out, just chasing girls from ninth grade. And me and my friend that I got caught stealing with, and one other friend that I knew from kindergarten, we called ourselves the Hot Boys. And my mom had a van, like a caravan, and it was real old, and we used to drive that van, and it was called the Hot Boy Van. And my one friend, he was pretty creative, so he made us business cards. And mine was like Hot Boy number one. He was Hot Boy number two. The other guy was Hot Boy number three. And we all had, it said Hot Boy number one, Tony, Pretty Tony, or whatever kind of name. And it had a quote on it. And it had my phone number. And so we would go to different little get-togethers for high schoolers. And we would pass out our cards to girls. And I can't remember if anybody ever called me or not, but you know, it was a long time ago. And that's how we would connect. And then we all had us a little girlfriend, and we would get in the Hot Boy van and we would go pick them up, and just doing what we young men were doing, thinking we ladies men. And it just became all about girls. And so anywhere we would go, hey, first one to five phone numbers, first one to five phone numbers. And we would just compete. And from there, it just was, that was a part of how you identify yourself as a man, how you make your name, who gets the most girls, who's the best in the sport that they play, and who gets the most girls. And that was boyhood going into manhood. And so after the ninth grade, I went to a private school because my basketball coach, AAU, which I don't know what AAU stands for, maybe American Athletic Union or something. But the travel basketball back then, we, from the Boys and Girls Club, they created a team. So in the summers of like eighth grade and I think maybe ninth grade, we played on this travel team, and we just go different tournaments and play people. And I was a starter on the team, and I think was the high scorer, or maybe second, if not the high score. And so I would be featured in the newspaper from AAU basketball. And then football, I played JV, but I quit. Well, we got kicked off the team, me and the guy who was stealing, because we missed practice a couple times and we got kicked off the team at the end. And then at the last game too, when we were gonna actually get to play, me and him got kicked off because we missed practice, two practices. And then, so my sophomore year, I went to the private school because my mom was crying and stuff. And she was like, hey, I don't want you, you know, I want you to go to this school because it's a Christian school and you need to get away from your friends. And you got in trouble in the ninth grade and you need to change your life. And so I went there, and they only had basketball. So I played basketball, and I averaged 18 points a game that year, which was made me number five in the county. two of the guys in the top five end up going to, you know, D1. One played at University of Tennessee, the Tennessee Vols. Another one played at UConn, the UConn Huskies. I think he won a national championship with them. And I played against them coming up too. So, you know, I was good at the game. I just was short. You know, I was like 5'9", so I just was little. And these guys were like, you know, 6'6". And so I played, and school was better. My grades went up from 2.5 GPA to a 3.3. And I really liked it. I was probably one of five black kids at this school. So I met a lot of, you know, white kids for the first time. And some of them were very well off and come from great families. And so it was different for me being able to go to a suite, you know, at the Bucks, Tampa Bay Bucks facility, and go into the box, you know, a suite, and watch the game from a suite. And then to go to the Orlando Magic and watch the game like courtside, basically. It was eye-opening. It changed my life, changed my perspective, and I really started to see some things. And at first I thought I was going to hate the school because I didn't want to leave my friends. I didn't want to be around a lot of, you know, white kids. No offense to, you know, my white listeners. It's just we had a racial divide where I come from. You know, Ku Klux Klan visited my middle school. So it was a racial divide. There was, you know, race wars, race fights, blacks versus whites, blacks versus Mexicans. And it was just kind of, you know, toxic. It was lines between the races, and almost like a prison. And so we, you know, I fell in love with the school, and I balled out my 10th grade year. So the next year, my 11th grade year, more players came to the school. We had a couple more basketball players come. One guy, he was originally from New York. Another guy was from New Jersey. Another guy was from Bartow. And a few of us played together on the team. And we, that year, I only averaged 11 points because we had a new guy come in. And he, you know, he took a lot of shots. And so, and the coach liked him. And so that changed the dynamic for me with basketball. But football showed up that year. They started a football team. And I became a running back. I had played running back my whole life, except for basically ninth grade, which I played some of the year. But now I'm at this private school, and I'm playing football, and I'm playing with, it was basically me and one other black guy from Bartow. He played wide receiver. And then the rest of the team were white guys, and then we were playing, you know, private school, so you're playing against, you know, schools that charge to go to the school. So therefore, the people that go to the school are typically well off. And most private schools were comprised of predominantly white students. And white players, on average, just were not as fast as black players. And, you know, that's no it's a mystery, but it's not news. Like, people have always kind of seen, you know, black people as muscular or fast and athletic. So I'm playing with these kids, and a lot of them never played football because they're, for as a black person, your way out was sports. But what I noticed for white people, they were more so more well off. Like, they were middle class, upper middle class, upper class. So their way out was education. Go to school, go to college, get a degree, and then come home and run your dad's business or join your dad's business. And there was a lot of business owners at this private school. So a lot of these kids did not need sports. So sports was like a hobby. Whereas for the black kids, sports was like a way of life. So I'm playing this sport, and I'm like, hey, this how I'm gonna make it. And I'm running all over these kids. You know, a running back is supposed to average like 4 or 5 yards a carry. I averaged over 10 yards a carry. 10 yards is a first down, so you get to start over on downs, for those of you, you know, who don't know football. So the numbers were kind of insane. And that was like light. Like, I wasn't even really trying too hard. And the coach didn't really give me the ball a lot, because when he gave me the ball, he saw it was just too easy. And he didn't want it to be something demoralizing for the other team. He didn't want to make his team look like, oh, we're nothing but Tony Gaskins, which was kind of the case. But, you know, you're at this school to where these parents coming to see their kids play. They don't want to just see, you know, me running up and down the field, scoring all the touchdowns. So a lot of times he would give the other running back more carries than me. And that guy would get like 20 carries and have like, you know, 80 yards. And I would get 5 carries and have 80 yards. And so, you know, it wasn't fair, but I was a financial aid student paying like a third of the cost to be there. Everybody was paying like $800 a month, and my parents only had to pay $50 a month. So, you know, you can't say too much. And from there, my senior year, my dad and my coach got into it, the basketball, because I got hurt my senior year of football. And I still finished with 1,300 yards, which is a lot. That had me number 3 in the county. And my dad asked my basketball coach, hey, can he take off for 2 weeks? And the coach was like, well, he can take off, but he needs to come and watch practice. And my dad was like, I want him to be nowhere near sports for 2 weeks just to, you know, reset his mind, detox from sports and start all over. And the coach said, no, you know, if he doesn't come to practice, then he's not going to be able to play. And my dad said, well, if you won't let him miss for 2 weeks, then I'm not going to let him play for you at all. And my dad thought that, you know, he was going to get his way. And the coach was like, fine. So then they both came to me and was like, hey, you can play if you want to play. But I was like, man, this is my dad versus my coach. I'm going to side with my dad. I'm not going to play. And I wasn't excited about playing anyways, because we had so many more players that we were like a little all-star team. My 11th grade year, we beat big schools. We beat the school that I came from, which was like, you know, you classified 1A, 2A, 3A, 4A, 5A, 6A. The school I came from was like a 4A school. And then I was at a 1A school. And it's classified based on the amount of students, to my knowledge and understanding. So we were beating 4A and 5A schools in basketball because we just had put together a little all-star team. And we just played good team basketball. And 12th grade, I wasn't excited about playing because I was a ball hog. You know, I wanted 20 points a game. So I'm like, if I'm going to go out here and get 9 points a game, it's a waste of my time. So I sat out basketball, and I end up getting a football scholarship. And it was a full scholarship to a Division II school. So you have, you know, Division I, Division II, Division III, and you have like NAIA, and you have JUCO. So Division I is the highest, of course. So I was on the second level, Division II. And there was a mid-level, what they used to call Division I AA. I committed to a Division I AA school, Florida Atlantic University. But they wanted me to walk on and earn a spot because they had given away their 63 scholarships by the time they got my highlight tape. And I agreed to that. But then the Division II school called me, West Virginia Wesleyan College in Buckhannon, West Virginia. They called me and the coach said, we have a full scholarship for you. So he said, hey, it's $28,000 a year to go here. Florida Atlantic was like $11,000 a year. So us, we just looked at it like, well, if it costs more, it must be a better school. And my mom was like, man, it's 1,000 miles away from home. I want you to go there because I want you to get away from your knucklehead friends. I don't want your friends to be able to come visit you, you know, in Boca Raton, which was like 3-4 hours from where we lived. And so I accepted that scholarship and I went up there. And at this time now, by the age of 18, I had slept with 22 girls and I was keeping count. So my life was there. I did not drink. I did not smoke. I still stole. I stole from a mall in Atlanta. I think it was Lenox Mall, but I didn't get caught. And so I still just had a little thief in me. And I don't know why. It was just a thrill, I guess, just being devilish. And I knew God, but I wasn't walking with God. And I went up there to the school and I end up, the school was easy as far as football is concerned. And it just did not turn me on, like meaning I wasn't challenged by the football players. Like, I get the ball, they hand me the ball, and I run over them, you know, just run all through them the same way I was doing in high school. Even though it was more black athletes at this school, their athletic ability wasn't where it would be if you're Division I. And I was a Division I athlete, but I was at Division II level because that was the only school gave me a full ride. So not being challenged, I really wasn't too focused. And then I did what they call a red shirt, whereas you sit out that season, but it doesn't count against your 4 years of eligibility. So essentially you'll be in school 5 years. And by doing that red shirt, not playing, the only reason I was in college was to play sports. So not being able to play in the games, but have to practice so hard 40 hours a week, I was like, this is crazy. Y'all gotta forgive you hear noise, I'm a lawn guy, but you know, it is what it is. So I was like, this is crazy. So I started faking injuries. I think I legitimately got injured once, but then I started kind of faking injuries because I didn't want to do all this practicing and not be playing. And I was a lazy person because when it comes to athletics, because my parents didn't play sports and they didn't push sports. My dad wasn't the type to like shove sports down my throat and like, hey, this is the only way to make it. He was real chill. And so I just didn't have that hunger and that desire like my teammates had. Like, they watch football, they watch the NFL, they watch other colleges play. I never watched a football game. I just was good at it. But I never watched a football game. I really did not know what was going on. In college is when I learned that when I, on certain plays, I got to wait on my offensive lineman to pull from his side to go in front of me to the side that I'm going to open up the hole. Like, I never knew that. Playing my whole life, I just would get the ball and run touchdowns. So here I am in college, and I got the ball, and I took off through the hole, and the coach stopped me. He's like, Tony, what are you doing? You got to wait on Russ. Russ is actually my security guard today. He's still a close friend because he's from Tampa, Florida. He was like, you got to wait on Russ to pull. He's going to pull. You jab step this way. You wait on him. He's going to go through the hole. He's going to clear open the hole. Then you come behind him. Make it easier on you. What are you doing? But I literally would get the ball, beat the lineman to the hole, put a move on the linebacker, do a spin move, cut on the cornerback, and I'm heading for the touchdown. And so I was actually learning about football in college, which is sad. But it was a way out of my neighborhood. And so here I was, I'm there. And you got to forget the lawn guy, he is here. But hey, I'm not finna let all this go to waste, so y'all forgive me. And so I may have to put some music up under this. So y'all forgive me if I have music under this. You know, I know it's kind of tacky, but you know, y'all bear with me. And so, and don't tell me what you want and what you don't want, because I got to give you what I could give you, because I really, you know, I really don't want to get too caught up in making this a job. So understand that. So here I am, you know, I'm sitting there and I'm in college, and next thing I know, like, guys, they smoking weed, they getting drunk, they doing all this different stuff. I didn't drink, I didn't smoke, I didn't curse. Only thing, my vice was dealing with the ladies. That was the main thing that I would be doing, is just dealing with the ladies. And so as I'm doing that, that's still in my focus, and I'm staying up late, and I'm, you know, going to class tired, I'm not eating right, and all of these things. And so one thing led to another. And then from there, it just kind of, it started to spiral a little bit. But, you know, I'm going to stop right here for this first recording. Lawnmower's behind me. And I actually just allowed a client that I coach normally to sign up for a VIP session. I'm not doing one-on-one sessions now, but from when I was, this client would always sign up. And so I just allowed this client to book a VIP session. And that session is in 2 minutes. So I'm going to stop here and I will finish up the story maybe tomorrow or another time. Talk soon.